Welcome to the Wealth Matters Podcast, where investors come together to better understand how to build passive cash flow and create generational wealth without all the confusing mumbo-jumbo. Here's your host and co-author of Amazon number one bestseller, Alpesh Pamar.
Welcome to Wealth Matters Podcast. Today's guest name is Mr. Leslie Awesome, and I'm calling him Mr. Awesome. That's how I would pronounce his last name. But anyhow, Leslie is the Director of Operations and co-founder of Side Capital Investment LLC. He manages the company operations, market or data analysis, cash flow, and budget analysis. Leslie himself, of course, is an entrepreneur and real estate investor, and he started investing in single family real estate in 2017 and transitioned to multifamily in 2019. So welcome, Leslie.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Alpesh. Thank you so much for that warm introduction as well.
Absolutely, man. So, and of course, today we want to talk about this multifamily market, the current trends. But before we get started with that, tell us something interesting or funny about yourself.
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know. That's interesting. I am fascinated by technology and things that are happening in the world right now, all the changes that is happening with AI and all this stuff. I love stuff like that. And I also enjoy flying drones. My wife says I have a dry sense of humor. So, but then my partners think I'm not that funny at all. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
We'll find out soon.
Yeah.
So you started with single family in 2017. I started in 2015 around the same time.
Yeah.
What was your first investment and how did it work out for you?
So my start was really from me questioning a lot because I'm a nurse anesthetist by training. In 2000, and I started working as a nurse anesthetist in 2015. And by around 2016, towards the end of 2016, I started questioning myself, like, what was going on. At that point, all I knew about investing was, like, put money in your 401k, do a target day fund or meet a financial planner and let them structure whatever for you and you put your funds in there. But I started feeling uneasy and asking myself if this was it for me. Like, this just doesn't make any sense that someone should spend the rest of their life working in the hospital and then hope to retire someday and then enjoy it. So when I started questioning that, I started learning. I picked up my first book to read on financial education, Second Chance at Your Money and Your Life by Robert Kiyosaki. And that introduced me to the world of real estate investing. It was still like a strange environment for me. I've been more accustomed to the traditional path. So I started off doing single family investing, which was something I could wrap my head around. Bought it together with my brother. Did like the BRR model, which is what I learned along the way. So we bought it, did some renovations on it. It was an estate sale, got a really good basis on it. Really got lucky because, to be honest with you, looking back, I didn't know too much back then. So it was a nice estate sale, did some renovations in there. Got a tenant in there, in one of the government programs, and it worked out really great. After about 6 months of ownership, we were able to refinance the property. The values in that area, in that property, had gone up by about $77,000. So just that was like a mind-expanding moment for myself. I'm like, oh my God, this is possible. You could create this much wealth by doing this, and you don't have to go to school or spend all these hours for it. So you could do that. Now imagine what I could do for myself and my family if I keep doing this. That was my very first investment, and that worked out really well. And that what really got me involved in real estate. And one other important thing is, like, during that process, I had taken time off of work to manage the renovations, and I really, really enjoyed it. I was one of like the happiest moments in my life, just going there, seeing how this property is transitioning and managing all the contractors and seeing that go through. And so that made me believe that this is something that I'm really going to enjoy doing.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing. So yeah. Let's talk about multifamily market, because that is what your current focus is. what trends are you seeing in the multifamily market right now? And we are recording this on March 27th of 2023.
So from our perspective, we're starting to see more deals than we've seen over the last 2.5 months.
Of course.
Yeah, the market has been really, 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 really dry because we are very aggressive. We believe that you can buy a good deal in every market. So we're always out there hitting the pavement looking for deals. And we have been and pretty much been reviewing everything that came to market, and there wasn't much. But over the last couple of weeks, we're starting to see a few more deals coming to market. But most of those deals are still not making sense. There still seems to be a disconnect between the sellers and the buyers. Prices have come down a little bit, but sellers still expect a higher premium for their properties. So what I'm seeing from our own experience and our own data sets is like increase in deal flow, price reduction a little bit, but now a few things might have changed with the events of last few weeks with the bank collapses, and then the Fed still going in and increasing the interest rates. Now, a lot of the experts are predicting there's probably going to be a reversion at some point during this year. So who knows what's going to happen? I felt like we were on a trend where we're like, okay, deals are starting to come. We might see some good deals come. Then now you might be like, oh, maybe that price drop, like the 7 to 10% price drop that we've seen, it might be a pause to that. So who knows what's going to happen in the next few weeks. Seems like things are changing so rapidly that we can't keep up.
So let's talk about the trends or try to decipher, right? So you said that what markets are you operating? So where are you seeing these deals?
We've seen our deals in the Southeast, searching heavily in the Atlanta area, Columbia, South Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, and the surrounding markets.
And when you say the deals are coming, means the sellers are ready to sell, or you're seeing that the cap rates are expanding?
Cap rates are expanding, not significantly, but cap rates are expanding in some of the deals that we're seeing. And some sellers are putting their deals back on the market. We've been reviewing some distressed assets as well. But some of them are so severely distressed that and the expectations from the buyers are still not there that would make sense for us to go after.
So when you say distressed asset, what kind of distress? So they are in like despair, they are in really bad condition, or maybe just tenants are not paying, or?
A little bit of both, not physical despair, more like operation side, tenants not paying, seeing a tick up in delinquency, reviewing assets with negative NOI, where the vacancies are quite high, delinquency is high. The operators are not pulling in enough to even make debt service payments. So we're seeing that we actually closed on an asset in December that here in Baltimore that was like more of an operations kind of situation where it's in a high quality area, but the management wasn't doing a great job. That management that we took over from, and that we are transitioning that asset and getting it back to fully stabilized right now. But the things that we're seeing 2 months in some of these markets in the Southeast that we're looking at, some of the distressed assets that we looked at, it's in so bad of a management situation that the sellers would have to be a little bit more realistic in their price expectations.
So, and I'm surprised that especially the rents have gone up in Southeast, and that's where I invest as well. We buy mobile home parks in Atlanta through all the way to North Carolina and South Carolina, right? And right now that we are still seeing some deals, but they are not distressed. Of course, there is operational efficiencies, but they are not in bad condition. I'm surprised in multifamily, you are still able to find those kind of distressed assets in some of those hot markets or high growth markets.
So, you know, I guess the tendency is like when the market is hot and everything is going up, sometimes you could get into assets without having, like one of the assets we saw, it's being managed, it's being self-managed by the owner.
Okay.
And it's like the first asset that they own in that market. So they're struggling with managing it. So there's always a story behind it.
Right.
We're getting to see a few of those right now. And then there are the assets that had a bridge debt on it without an interest rate cap.
Yes.
And they might have experienced, yeah, And then on top of that, the increase in the debt service payment and some delinquency is just making it a more of a challenge for some of operators to manage it. So, and again, multifamily is like any business, right? If you buy the, you could, acquisition is one thing, managing the asset is another thing. So if it's, it doesn't matter how much rent grow in the market, if the management is not there to take good care of the property and take good care of the tenants, and making sure that everything is being serviced properly, you're going to run into some issues.
Right. So, and I was trying to, I totally know where this is going, right? But I wanted to, you know, peel the onion, right? And talk about all these issues with my listeners. So one more thing, right? What do you think, or what would push these sellers to sell now? You know, I know the things have totally changed, but they are still not accepting the change. What would be the final straw?
I guess if you get to the point where the assets continue to underperform and they get significant pressures from the lenders to pull some of these properties from them, then they might be able to sell. Or if you find some kind of a way to negotiate a good exit for them, so they might be able to sell. So at the end of the day, it just depends on what their expectations are, what they're looking to get out of it. So we look into it. We try to, if there's an opportunity there, we look into it and try to work out a solution that makes sense, but that will still protect our investors as we go in to seek these opportunities. And if it makes sense for the seller, fine. If not, we'll move on to the next one.
Right. No, that makes sense. So you brought up another interesting point, which was the lenders, right? What has changed on the lending side? What are some of the good lending options right now?
So options right now is just agency debt. That's what we're looking at. Lower leverage than it was before. Most of our underwritings are like 55 to 60% leverage from the agency side. And we are looking at our agency floaters that with a rate cap, about 7 to 10 year loans. And there's also options for like the fixed rate debt as well. But we do anticipate that the interest rates are going to drop down in the months ahead. So we are good with the floater products.
Got it. And how have you changed your underwriting to protect yourself and investors right now? Because things have changed and really fast.
Absolutely. Things have changed really fast. It's funny because 18 months ago, you I was seeing people underwriting with rent growth of like 10, 14% on some of these deals, you know. And it's interesting because thankfully we never did. We always did conservative in our rent growth when we did our projections. So right now we are doing zero rent growth year one,
right,
and year two, and then just like standard from year three onwards. Staying very conservative and just thinking back at looking back, let's say 18 months ago, if we had been underwriting like the 10, 15% rent growth year two, year three, and now we're seeing in some markets where rents are actually stagnant, or in some localities rents are actually declining, you know, you'd be struggling to maintain those projections right now.
Right. So rent growth is where you are saying 0%, and what else are you focusing on from underwriting perspective?
We are being very conservative on with keeping track of the delinquency in the market. Depends on the kind of asset as well. If we're going into a C asset, we want to bake in some delinquency there because you're gonna have some of those challenges when you come into the asset as well. And then we're also looking at our renovations and making sure that we're not too aggressive on our rent bond projections, you know, and making sure that these numbers are vetted in the market with existing evidence, like another asset that is producing those numbers or the asset itself that is actually producing those numbers as well. We also, generally this year, expenses on the payroll side have gone up. Expenses on like renovation costs have gone up. So, and we also are underwriting a good amount of reserves in any of these deals that we're going into, just in case we come into the recession comes in and lasts a little bit longer, we should have enough reserve to be able to sustain the assets.
I agree. So let's talk about this. Do you think there will be a lot more opportunities in Q3 and Q4?
I wish I had a magic ball to tell you no or yes, but I honestly do believe so. One of the things I'm keeping track on, which is not necessarily in the multifamily side, is on the office side. There are a lot of loans on the office side on the books of a lot of banks that are coming in due in the next few months, and we might see some distress on that side. And I just believe that negative feeling in one side of the real estate side might transfer a little bit over to the multifamily side as well. And there's still a lot of loans that are coming due later on this year or at some point this year. There are a lot of business plans that have come to fruition. So I think there's going to be more deals towards the end of the year for sure. As I'm an optimist, so I always believe there'll be more deals. So
yeah, no, I, as I said, keeping my fingers crossed as well.
Yeah.
So what are some of the mistakes you have made with your investments?
One key mistake we made in one asset, we ended up not buying the asset, ended up having to pull out, is we went after an asset without necessarily going in that walk in the market, had an LOI accepted and had things starting to move. Then before, when we went out there to do more digging and look at the market, it wasn't really a good market that I wanted to invest in. It looked good on paper, but when you go over there in person and you talk to the people, you see that the market was transitioning in the wrong direction. So that was one key learning factor to make sure that before we go into any new market, we go in there, spend some time with the locals, walk the areas, walk the properties, then before we move forward.
That makes sense. What has been your best deal so far?
Best deal so far is a deal we exited on in December of 2022.
Perfect timing.
I know. So we purchased this deal April of 2021 for $12.55 million, and exited 21 months later for about $18 million, and we were able to return 29% average on our returns to our investors. The deal did really well from the operation side. We did a great job at increasing the NOI, decreasing the expenses. And then that just was just bolstered by the rent growth and everything that was going on at that time. So we were able to fulfill our business plan over a short period of time and exit.
That's awesome. Now let's talk about the worst side, right? What has been your worst deal?
Worst deal? So I haven't been in the multifamily space long enough to really have like a significant negative experience. We've had some challenging deals. I'll have to say like one of our deals where we're doing like a total renovation plan on it and transitioning the property. We had some delinquency issues and had to transition that and had to transition the staff over there as well. So that has been our greatest challenge so far. So I haven't had a long enough experience to really pinpoint to something that I would say is our worst deal so far.
Well, that makes sense. So I think this was great. Thank you so much for sharing a lot of golden nuggets. Are you ready for fire round?
Let's do it. Let's do it, man.
Would you be changing any business or investment strategy because of inflation or recession?
No, I'm just so grateful that I'm in the multifamily space. If I wasn't, I would be getting into the multifamily space because of inflation and recession.
That's awesome. Favorite investment, real estate, or business book?
Oh, man, I read so many books in real estate and investment. So sometimes it's tough to pinpoint which one is my favorite. It's usually the ones that I just read recently. E-Myth, the E-Myth Revisited.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's one that I'm reading right now, and I love it. It's a great book.
Okay, you reminded me. I read it like 3-4 years ago, so I got to revisit it.
yeah, the E-Myth Revisited is a really good. I think okay. It's probably one of the. And the other book, I would just shoot another one here, is $100 Million Offer by Alex Hormozi. I think that's his name. Okay. It's a short read, but it's a fantastic book.
Okay, I have not read that one or heard about it, so I'm going to make a note.
Yes.
Any tool or website you recommend or you cannot live without?
ChatGPT. I know this is new, but that thing is fascinating. It's just yes. Amazing the capabilities that it has, and I've been using it a lot lately, and I love the platform.
Oh, that's awesome. So even though this is a fire round,
yeah,
And I love ChatGPT myself as well.
Yeah.
But no other guest has spoken about it. So can you elaborate on what all do you do on ChatGPT right nowadays?
So ChatGPT just helped me to be more creative, right? I think it just augments our potential as human beings, because some of the mundane tasks that you can take a lot of time, it just helps you get through it. So it helps me with like creating, if I'm coming up with an idea, for example, on like my LinkedIn post, for example, I'm not someone that is good at social media management, but I do understand I have to give value and continue to do that. So I build out my posting schedule and do all of that with the help of ChatGPT. I use that a lot for writing like emails or coming up with ideas on newsletters for our business and everything. We use it as well. We started playing with it too on the modeling side of Excel. It's fascinating the power that it has to come up with like Excel formulas that you could just pull out of it and then you use it on your template. So I'm playing with it for multiple uses. Most of it right now is writing and modeling, and it's amazing, especially the upgrade of ChatGPT. It is amazing the power that that thing has. So it could be like a huge add-on for anyone in their business. So I love it. Sure.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Any advice for beginner investors?
I'll say take a plunge, get started. Don't get carried away by the negative news cycle that we are in right now. These are the moments where you find some of the greatest opportunities. If you could just keep your mind open to opportunity, because when things are changing, a lot of people just get carried away with the negativity and not move forward. Now is your best time to get in, find great assets, buy for cash flow, and then just hold on for long term and you're going to do well. You're muted, Apesh.
That's great. How do you give back?
Ah, man, I love giving back. I love, one of the ways I give back is by teaching and mentoring others. Another way we give back, which is like has been like a life changing for us, is we participate with an organization called Operation Stand, Walk, and Run. As Excite Capital, we travel back to disadvantaged areas to go do joint replacement surgeries.
Nice.
Our CEO is an orthopedic surgeon. I am a nurse anesthetist by training. So we actually go there with the team to perform these surgeries where we replace people's hips and knees for free or for a very limited cost. And that's one of my favorite ways of giving back, because you see the immediate impact of having somebody coming into the clinics, almost crawling, and then walking out, standing on their 2 feet. And to understand that you had some kind of small role to play into that, it's a tremendous feeling to have. I enjoy doing that. Sure.
That's amazing. How can my listeners reach out to you?
The best way to reach out to us is to get started. Just go on our website, which is www.xsite. That's X as in xylophone, S-I-T-E, excitecapital.com. Right there, you'll be able to get in touch with myself or any one of my founders. And please reach out to us. If you have any questions, any way we could be of value to you, reach out. We love connecting with other like minds.
Thank you so much, Leslie, for your time today.
Thank you, Apesh. Thank you so much for having me on your platform.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Wealth Matters podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes so others can enjoy the show too. Have a great week and happy investing!